And when I got that character, Lando Calrissian, kind of bigger than life kind of character.
Are you a good guy?
He is dubious. If you're an actor, you should do anything you want to do.
That's a great point of view, but the theater would be bomb. Billy?
Yeah, I'm right over here.
Billy, D?
Hey, William.
Hello.
How are you?
A great pleasure.
Nice to
thank
see you.
Thank you for coming.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, look at us.
And I'm sorry I didn't...
I dressed up for you.
Well, I dressed up for you.
I don't usually dress, but I was like, I know this guy's going to be on point.
Get out of here.
You?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
No.
You know how giddy I have been all day? Like, I'm going to get, like, throw down with Billy Dee Williams?
Give me a break. Excuse me.
Well, you know, when I was...
You look marvelous, darling.
When I was a kid, you know, you were like... We all wanted to be, like, that popular with the ladies.
And I don't blame you.
No, I mean, just when you're a teenager... Especially, you know, everything in your mind is about like, oh, look, they have Colt 45. Got it just for you.
And I have my medicine. I forgot to take my medicine this morning. And I brought my medicine with me. My medicine should have a Colt 45 with my medicine.
Billy T, you don't take medicine. You drink Colt 45. No. It's still 1978. And I'm still 16. And you, no. And I was always... Such a big fan.
No, that's very sweet of you.
Well,
thank you.
Well, you know, when you're a...
Well, I was on your show a couple of times.
The old show. Yeah,
the old show.
Right.
Yeah. And I always remember that experience. Because I remember never contributing anything to any of the discussions.
But that's it. You're so iconic. And you're so cool. You don't need to... You contribute just by existing, you know. Because...
Well, you're very kind. Thank
you.
No,
it's so true. I mean, I don't think you know the effect you had on, like, lots of... Even, like, suburban white kids. And that's quite...
What's a suburban white kid?
What is a suburban white kid?
Yeah, what is that?
You're looking at one.
You're a suburban white kid? What does a suburban white kid look like?
I grew up in an all-white town.
What does that mean?
In New Jersey.
What is an all-white town? I never heard of an all-white town.
Yes, you did. what do you
drink? You don't care about stuff like that, do you? Really? Seriously?
Care about what stuff?
Well, all white towns and black white towns?
Well, I'm just saying it's a fact. And it's a relevant fact because you were...
But do you spend a lot of time and energy thinking about this stuff?
Well, race is certainly part of politics. And I certainly think about that an awful lot, yeah.
Yeah, you do? Why?
It's my job.
It's too much trouble.
It's my job. I do a show about politics.
You need to relax. Don't worry. It's going to be all right.
It's my job. And I enjoy my job. My father was in news. You know.
Your father was in news?
Yeah, my father was a newsman in...
Where?
New York.
In a little white town?
That's
somewhere?
That's where we lived. It was a little white town. You can say it all you want. It doesn't... Not going to change... That's where America was. And it's relevant because, like, you were a African-American movie star at a time and a leading
I'm
man.
I'm an African-American? What is that?
Oh, for fuck's sake. when it wasn't easy.
African-American. I got Indian blood in me. I got Cherokee Indian, Irish. I got...
Well, again, it was relevant because it prevented you
African,
from...
African, I got the full spectrum of colors in me.
Whatever it is, you would have gotten parts if you came along in a different era later on that you couldn't get in the 70s and 80s.
Well, that's true of being Jewish. That's true.
It's not true of being Jewish in the 70s and
80s. Well, who knew
who the Jewish actors
were? I remember in those years, I mean, the networks were considering... When they were considering what they wanted to put on television, what it was going to be relevant for television, it was always those kind of considerations, which I thought was pretty silly. But this is the way people think.
Yes. I don't remember the Jewish part of it.
I do remember.
Well, in the 50s and 60s, yes. But you'd be hard-pressed to like get the average man in the street to even tell you accurately which celebrities are Jewish. You know, some of them are obvious, you know.
Well, I remember in the years when Molly Goldberg came along. I'm that old.
Who's Molly Goldberg?
The Molly Goldberg Show.
Never heard of it. What's that?
You never heard of it? You got to look it up.
What year were we talking?
We're talking about the beginning of television.
50s.
In those years, like the 50s, 60s.
Right,
50s.
Okay. Molly Goldberg.
Yeah. You never heard about the Molly Goldberg Show?
No. What was it on the Dumont Network?
One of the best shows ever.
What did she do? Sing?
No. She had a sitcom.
Molly Goldberg.
Yeah. Look it up.
Oh, I'm not doubting you. I just don't know it. I just never heard it.
It was one of the best shows on television at that time.
Well, I grew up in New York City. Yeah. Well, I probably wasn't born. Which I love being able to say, because I don't get to say that very to many people anymore.
I forget the ladies. In fact, this book, the editor of this book, the publisher, the editor of the book, oh my God. Anyway, she was related to this woman who did the Molly Goldberg Show. Vicky. Oh, come on, Billy. My brain's not working. Anyway, she was related
to
this lady.
Was she attractive, this Molly Goldberg? I mean,
she was a wonderful, wonderful. It was a. Well, in New York City, when I grew up in New York City, I grew up around a lot of interesting people. And my very first friend was a Jewish boy, a Bernie. And the neighborhood I moved into, my family and I moved into, was predominantly Jewish. The Jews moved out when the blacks started moving in. And it was one of those kind of situations. But, you know, I always find all of this stuff amusing, really, personally.
I find it amusing, too. I mean, there's also tragic parts of it, but...
Of course there's tragic parts, but there's tragic parts of everything.
Exactly. No, look, I've made a career laughing at things that are not on their surface funny, because the news is generally tragic. But, I mean, the alliance that we always hear about in the 60s, the civil rights era between the blacks and the Jews, I always was a little...
It was a strong alliance.
Like I said, I was never skeptical of it. it was a strong alliance. Well, you would know better.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it really fell apart. I mean, Kanye aside, but I mean...
We're talking about this generation? I don't know what this generation is all about.
I don't either.
It's a whole new thing.
Well, they're fragile. They're hothouse plants.
About misinformed?
They were raised wrong.
What about misinformed? What about not having...
Yes, some of it is not their fault, of course.
What about not having a sense of history?
Right. No, absolutely. You're so right. They do not know anything, but it's not their fault because... You know, it's not the responsibility of the child to instruct themselves. I never had to worry about that. In my little town, whatever color it was, we just went to school. You went to school.
So did I.
I know. I'm just saying. They taught you the basics. They taught you the shit. I didn't leave that school until I knew basically everything that like a normal, intelligent person should know. Not anything from Nobel Prize winner in literature or a science, just a regular person would know these things, and kids today know nothing. They know you don't have to know anything, and they will sign that diploma and kick you out the door if you even finish it. It's criminal. Yes, they don't know anything, but it doesn't sap their confidence in still opining on everything as if they did know something, like about Gaza. Stuff like that. They don't know nothing.
I think the 21st century has certainly presented some challenges that we all have to deal with right now. I mean, things have changed tremendously.
I'm always saying that.
It doesn't mean that it can't be corrected.
Right.
And it will be corrected.
No.
AI will certainly correct everything.
I mean, I have to believe in it because being 68, I'm looking at AI to make me immortal. Okay, why don't I just say it? I'm just going to come out with it. Make me immortal. That Listen, is what I'm looking for, and I'm looking to AI to do it.
Well, yeah, we're creating stuff that can move a lot faster than the brain can move.
Yes.
The brain has created something that can move a lot faster than your own brain.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. The risk of AI is probably greater than it making me immortal, but since I am 68, I'm going to go with that. I'm going to go with the risk, and if it kills the rest of humanity, I'd like to say I'm sorry.
But maybe it's the next step. I mean, it's like the Industrial Revolution. There was the Industrial Revolution, and it created all of these.
Yes, but this is an exponential. I think this is a exponentially different.
This is different,
but exponentially. You know.
Yes.
Right. And that's the fear, is that.
But so was in the Industrial Revolution.
I don't know if it was exponential. I mean, I think if you measured the difference in people's lives, yes, it did change.
It's all going to change, Bill, but, no matter what.
You know, somebody wrote a book or an essay once about a very controversial thing at the time to the tech bros, because they didn't like hearing this. But the point of it was that all the inventions between 1850 and 1903 were actually more consequential in people's lives than anything, and this is when this essay was written, pre the smartphone, I would say that changed. But he was saying that from 1850 to 1903, we had things like refrigeration and electricity and the telephone and air travel. And these things were actually more influential and changed people's lives more than the internet. As great as the internet, as influential as it was, it wasn't electricity. And I would say the smartphone then came along, and I think that is because it's changing.
But certainly what you're saying is one perspective. I mean, there are many perspectives.
Of course. And, well, I'm only one person.
Yeah,
I mean, I can only have one. What am I, a hydra?
You are a product of what was introduced to you at a very early point in your life. So your perspective
But we don't want to go there because it involves my town.
And everybody's perspective is based on where it all begins.
Exactly. And that certainly is the case with religion. I mean,
and that's what my book is about, by the way.
Your book. Tell me all about your book, because I just got it today, but I can't wait to dive into your life.
It's a very interesting life because when you're very young and you're being presented a kind of eclectic perspective on the life experience because of the people that raise you and their perspective on their life experience, I feel very fortunate that I came from a people who were interested on interested in everything on every single level. I mean, there was never this discussion about black or white or black. It was like, you know, you had things to do and you did it.
I couldn't agree more. I mean...
You know, you had a family to raise and you raised them.
Right.
And if you have children, you're going to introduce them to all of the things that could be beneficial to them.
Which is not to negate the idea that it is a factor. Race and racism is a factor.
My grandmother was one of the biggest bigots ever, the first bigot I ever met.
Who did she hate?
She didn't hate anybody.
You said
she
bigot.
Didn't like. Well, I'm. She's not. She wasn't that extreme.
Okay, but against. Well,
she didn't live with.
Who was she bigoted against?
Well, she was a West Indian. She was from the British West Indies.
Right.
And she from Montserrat. And she was a British subject. And she never became a citizen. She always remained a British subject. Used to sit around the house singing, "Hail Britannia, Britannia rule the waves. Britain never, never shall be slaves." My grandfather worked on the Panama Canal.
Is that right? Yeah. The Panama Canal. Yeah.
He was one of the workers on the Panama Canal.
Holy shit. Yeah.
But I come from a family of very industrial kind of people.
The Panama, this is your grandfather.
This is my grandfather.
Wow.
On my mother's side of the family.
Now, the Panama Canal was complete.
My father's side of the family, they were all cowboys from Texas. They were sharecroppers. I mean, but these are the kind of things that I really wanted to kind of express in this book. I wanted to talk about not people who are complaining about what they didn't have,
right,
or what they should have.
No, I mean, again, not that it's not a factor. It's just that life is such a complex mixture of advantages and disadvantages, some that you could not calculate. I mean, just having a bad personality is a terrible thing. I'd rather be black a great personality, certainly in this year, than white with a bad personality.
Get off of that. Stop that. Forget about that.
Stop that. You know, you're right. Exactly.
Stop that.
Well, I'll just finish that thought by saying, of all the things that men probably dream about, I mean, you were given a bounty of that, which is attractiveness to the opposite sex. You know, you were a sex symbol. What? You're probably still pulling. No?
Okay.
Why is that a laugh?
I don't know, because it is. It's just funny to me.
But as you know, it's true.
I see myself as a walking absurdity.
Well, I mean,
it's more fun to be a walking absurdity than to be attractive and lovely and desirable.
Stop talking with me. I'm telling you, I was there. I watched television. I went to the movies. I lived it. I was born in 1956. When you were like in these commercials and the movies and Richard Pryor and all this stuff, like, come on, man. Your life must have been fun. A lot of fun.
No, I mean, my life is interesting. I'll say that much, at least.
You don't cover that in the book, the orgies?
Orgies. Yeah, the orgies, I talk about the orgies.
Well, most people don't have orgy stories at all.
You know, I remember.
I don't have any orgy stories.
When I was a kid, really? One of my favorite books was J.D. Salinger's Catcher in the Rye. And
that's
I always
great.
Related to that kid. He was just sort of having this great, wonderful, incredible adventure without malice. That was the kind of kid I was. And I just found myself in situations that I didn't ask for, I didn't look for, but I found myself in those situations. And it was all just, for me, it was just simply an adventure. And I, beyond that, I just use it maybe to do a painting, or I use
right.
it in some character I play in some project that I'm doing.
You would scoff and laugh at method acting.
Would I what?
Scoff and laugh at method acting.
The method acting, I came up in that during that whole period.
Like I say, that's really what you do best is method acting. But no, it sounds to me like you just wanted to.
I just do acting. And method acting is nothing more than simply finding a way to approach your craft, to your art.
So you did engage
in your own way.
Well, I mean, some actors, they just say, hit your mark and bark, you know.
But I didn't come from that point of view. I came from a point of view of right. being serious about my craft.
No, you were. I'm just, it sounded to me like you were saying that you were just, content to.
But I was a silly little kid doing silly little things. And I used it in the way, as far as my creativity was concerned, as a painter.
So you always, like from a childhood, thought you were going to go into this?
Into what?
Show business.
No, I got into show business because my mom introduced me to show business. My mom.
At what age?
Mommy wanted to be an opera singer. She studied opera for many years. She was working for Ben Boyer and Max Gordon, who were managers and producers on Broadway at the time at the Lyceum Theater. And they were doing this play, a musical by Kurt Weill. And they needed a little boy to play this character, a page boy. And
you were how old?
And I was 6.5 years old. And so mommy took me to the theater and had me audition. And I got on the stage. They had me walk across the stage one time, two times. And they said, thank you, Billy, that's enough. And I decided that I was really smitten by then, the whole idea of being on that stage. And so at that point, I wanted to do it the third time. And they said no, and I said, when they tried to stop me, I started crying. And I always say I cried my way into show business. But and then it was all in everything that my life, the way I look at my life, is it was all an introduction.
To what?
To whatever I was going to do. It was an introduction. It was all being introduced to me. I didn't ask for it. I didn't look for it. You know, every time I wanted to go right, something would say, no, 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 Billy, go left.
And what do you attribute? Do you have a spirit? Do you believe in the spirit?
There's a part of an energy that I think we all have in our lives.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, you definitely do. There's no question about it.
We're guys. We want to look good without having to think about it. Men's closets were due for a radical reinvention, and that's where Roan comes in. Roan's commuter collection is the most comfortable, breathable, and truly versatile set of products known to man. They have products for every occasion, like the world's most comfortable pants, dress shirts, quarter zips, polos, and blazers. Roan's signature four-way stretch fabric is breathable, flexible, and works everywhere from your commute to work to the 19th hole. Roan's commuter collection features wrinkle release technology and is 100% machine washable. They are treated with Gold Fusion anti-odor technology for more wears between washes, so you'll be fresh and clean all day long. The commuter collection can get you through any work day and straight into whatever comes next. Head to roan.com/random and use promo code RANDOM to save 20% off your entire order. That's 20% off your entire order when you head to find your corner office comfort. Club Random is brought to you by Skechers Hands-Free Slip-Ins. You know, I'm thrilled to have discovered Skechers Hands-Free Slip-Ins. Skechers Hands-Free Slip-Ins will change your life because, as the title says, you just slip into them. Skechers Hands-Free Slip-Ins are available in a variety of types of shoes, boots, and sandals with and without laces. For golfing, pickleball, hiking, walking, running, slip-resistant, or casual loafers, no matter the activity, just slip in and go with Skechers Hands-Free Slip-Ins. I love my Skechers slip-ins. They're especially convenient when my hands are full and I'm mixing a cocktail here at Club Random. And when I am lighting up one of my clove cigarettes, I don't have to remember to tie my shoes. Just step in and go with Skechers hand-free slip-ins. Find them in shoe stores everywhere or go to Skechers.com/random or text Skechers to 511-511 for 25% off your first pair of Skechers hands-free slip-ins with free shipping and returns when you sign up to be a Skechers Plus member. Go to Skechers.com/random or text SKECHERS to 511-511. Remember, there's no T in Skechers. Go to Skechers.com/random to save 25% off your first pair and receive free shipping. Terms, conditions, message, and data rates may apply. Hey, Club Random fans, guess what I did? I wrote a damn book. Look, it's real, with printing on every page. Yes, it's a book for grown-ups, but it'll make you laugh a lot so you'll feel like a kid. How do I know you'll laugh? Because the essays in this book were LOL tested by the real-time audience every Friday night for many years. Everything is covered. Republicans, Democrats, Trumpsters, Wokesters, free speech, media, cancel culture, kids today. Sex, love, cops, technology, showbiz, race, drugs, religion, money, guns. It is a virtual encyclopedia of every good thing I ever said for the last 20 years. I guess it should have been a little thicker, but what can you do? It's called What This Comedian Said Will Shock You, and it's available for pre-order now where you get your books or at SimonandSchuster.com. Never smoked pot?
No, I never smoked pot.
No drugs?
No.
No drugs?
Oh, except LSD.
Yeah, that might sneak in under the drug line. What about Coke?
No.
Never. Yeah, that's a bad one.
No.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I don't like all of that kind of stuff, really, to tell you the truth.
Right. I get it, but it is amazing how many show people who you would think have everything going for them somehow find a way to ruin it by doing too much drugs.
But that's not just showbiz people. There's a lot of people. I had two brothers, one thrown off a roof because he was owed money to some drug dealers. And his brother ended up dying from heroin. Yeah, but I used to, at some point, I used to try to help people, heroin addicts. And I would turn them on to methadone, only to find out that I was just turning them on to another drug. Yes, you know, exactly. Then I stopped doing that, trying to be helpful.
But you knew Pryor, didn't you? Weren't you friends with Richard Pryor?
Yeah, I knew Pryor very well.
What do you make of that drug? I mean, I remember...
Well, he was a silly boy.
A silly boy. I mean, he was a great...
He was a silly boy. And his silliness brought him to a place where he didn't allow himself to really grow and expand and become something beyond how he ended.
Do you think growing up in the whorehouse had anything to do with it?
Yes, of course.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. That's what I'm just getting back to. What when a child starts with a point of view, well, it's like kids who are taught to kill people.
Right.
You know, and there are certain people in this world who teach their children to become killers. So they end up being killers.
So you're saying growing up in the whorehouse, well, with you, the hose came much later. But no.
Well, I mean, you're a child, you're impressionable.
Right. But I'm just trying to fill in the dots here. Like, how does that actually manifest itself when you get out in the world? Okay, I'm a child, I'm growing up in a whorehouse, it's terrible.
It becomes part of your psyche.
The psyche of horse trading sex for money?
Yeah, it's there.
That's in your brain?
Even when you think you want to get... There are some people, by the way, who go through bad experiences, and I think you understand this, who don't end up...
Yeah, fucked up.
Yeah.
I know. I've thought the same thing. Why does one person... They go through, you know their background, you know they're not lying. They tell you the most horrendous stories, abuse as a child, and the father and the uncle or whatever, and they're the nicest people. And they seem to have no bitterness, and then some other people, it just fucks up. Why? That is the key question in psychology and so many sociological disciplines. Why? Just you put people under the same circumstance. What makes some... go this way and some go that way?
Well, I guess that's a question we've been asking for a long, long time.
No, I don't have...
We're all still looking for the answer to that. Who knows?
I know.
This is, why this planet? Why all of these...
Why anything?
...situations on this planet?
If you really want to take it back further, it's why anything. If you could say, okay, what if we could say... I mean, they believe that the universe started with the Big Bang Theory. Okay, so now we've put a time on it. 14 billion years ago, all of the universe was created in a massive explosion, and all the trillions of planets and stars. But why do that?
And then we end up with...
why do that?
But you end up with duality, at least.
I mean, they really wanted a big beginning, you know?
Well, I mean... The thing that, I'm not a religious person.
Oh, good.
I'm a person that...
Thank you, Jesus.
No, but I don't mean it to be... I'm not saying that people who want to be religious, that's fine.
Exactly. That's fine.
Yeah. But I feel that there's a lot more to this question of life than just simply creating... some image called God.
You know? Totally agree. I mean...
I think that we're much more than that. We're much greater than that. And it's much more mysterious than that.
Right.
It's...
Yeah, we can't...
I just want to continue on one path. And that path is to... Instead of doing this, I want to do this. I want to spend my life doing this.
With who?
With the world.
Oh, the world. I think you've already been there.
I want to continue doing it.
A lot of ladies like you.
No, forget about that part.
I can't forget about it. Okay, it was too much of an important part of my youth.
Okay, fine. That's great.
Yeah, I get it. You're more than that.
Let me put it this way. I'm used to it.
I'm not. I'm not used to it.
I mean, it's no big deal to me.
Yeah, but you have to understand, like, so much of...
I'm going to pass through all of this. You're going to pass through all of this.
Well,
I can't speak for you. I can only speak for myself.
But so much
I'm going to pass through all of this. I'm going to go, you know, the brain is like this library. And this library holds the key, all of the experiences that you've contributed to this experience, at least for me. I'm thinking, only talking about myself. Once I'm out of here, and I'm going to be out of here, the flesh is gone, is over. Forget about the flesh. That's not important. But now, at some point, if in fact I'm going to be faced with something else, I want to be faced with it knowing that I've contributed all the productive, positive kind of energy.
Well, good for you. So if AI could keep you going, you still wouldn't?
That's not my world.
But if it could, if they came to you in 5 years and said, AI, because that's very possible. AI has basically found a way
to... That's not my world. It's not going to be my world.
It's not your world, but it would affect your world because you'd have to make a decision.
My world is going to be gone. I'll be out of here.
In 5 years?
It's for you to do. You have to deal with it, not me.
Well, you could be totally here in 5 years.
I won't be here in 5 years.
Really? You think you'd be dead in 5 years?
I'll be dead in 5 years.
Well, I'm glad we got you today. Oh, good. I finally got a laugh out of him.
I'll be out of here.
You will not be out of here. Okay, listen. If you're not out of here in 5 years, you have to come back. What do you want?
Nothing.
Oh, okay. I can tell.
I don't want anything.
If you're here in 5 years, you have to come back. And also, you have to answer that question, which is if AI.
Okay, if I'm here for 5 years.
Yes.
I'm just going to look at AI and say, AI.
Thank you.
Hello. You want? Let's have a
thank
glass
you.
Of
yeah,
wine.
Yeah, let's AI. To AI not being all evil.
Let's.
Okay, you can be evil, but also keep us alive.
You know, no, talk about now AI and talk about evil. That's the scary part. The scary part is we got two kinds of people in this life, good people and bad people.
Wow. That's
well,
that's
let me just
true.
Finish. You got two good, you got the good guy and you got the bad guy. Hopefully the bad guy doesn't get a hold of AI and take control of it to a degree.
But come on, Billy. I mean, that's a little simplistic. That's Star Wars.
There's nothing simplistic about
that. There's only good guys and bad guys.
You call that simplistic?
There is good.
You call that simplistic?
Yes, sir, I do.
No.
There is good and bad people, and there's bad and good people. We're mostly a complex mixture of those two things. Yes, sometimes.
Let's appeal to the better side of the bad.
Okay, but that's a very,
bad side.
I mean, you know, look. I
want
I have to admit,
whatever all of this new what we're dealing with technology is all about. Hopefully, this technology is going to be in the hands of people who are going to use it for the
right. No, I couldn't agree more.
The betterment.
It's almost the keyest question there is.
Yeah,
who's
and that's the question. But,
right.
You know, science fiction writers have been writing about this stuff for generations.
Right. No, and that's a very open question because, you know, I've met most of the big tech bros. They run the gamut. I mean, there are some who, ugh, and some I really like, and some in the middle, you know, like Elon, genius, and could save humanity, and also goes off and... you know, does really silly, unnecessary, unforced error kind of things and embraces people I just don't understand. I get why you would want to, like, allow everyone to speak. I am pro-free speech, so I get that. But then don't put a bear hug around the worst of them. That I don't get. But that's what I mean about we're not good or bad. We're a mixture. We're all... jelly
no, there's
roll.
No. There's absolutely no question about that. There's duality,
right?
Yeah.
Well.
But hopefully, within these constructs,
right,
of the duality, we can appeal to the better side.
Yes.
Of ourselves. You know, and that's the great test and the great mystery. You know, the fact that we're on this planet and
I know.
And we've been trying to figure out why we're on this planet for as long as human beings have existed.
That subject interests you, like cosmology. And is that why you wanted to do Star Wars?
Star Wars.
What?
Why I wanted to do Star Wars?
You have to forgive me, but I don't know anything about Star Wars.
Really?
I could never get into Star Wars.
I'm one of these people who, if I'm going to be creative, let me be creative as an individualist, not based, I don't want to do anything based on this whole idea that you're a black person or you're a white person and things of that nature. I'm an artist. I'm a creative entity in this life.
Right.
I want to take, if you give me something that I can play with, and when I got that character, Lando Calrissian, first of all, Calrissian, I said to myself, that's an Armenian name.
Right.
Let me see what I can do with that.
Right.
And then when I got the cape, I said, wow, this adds to the whole idea of creating this kind of bigger than life kind of character.
Are you a good guy?
He is dubious.
See?
He's good, but that makes the character very interesting.
Of course. You know the Greek mask, Janus, the god with its half, the mask where it's half one face and half the other. That's all of us. I mean, they knew that back then. The Greeks knew that.
Yeah, as a creative entity in this life, a person in this life, what do you do when you presented something like that? You sort of like, instead of like playing politics with it, see if you can take it and
exactly, and
make it something interesting.
I couldn't agree more.
And innovative.
And you did.
And that was what I wanted to do.
That must have been lucrative.
Absolutely.
And nothing wrong with that.
Well, I'm a capitalist.
Me too. No, it's, you know, capitalism.
I don't mind being a capitalist.
Capitalism
I think most of us are capitalists and don't want to admit it.
Well, capitalism is like what Churchill said about democracy. It's the worst form except for all the others. You know, like that's what is so bad about the kids, getting back to that, not knowing anything. They think, oh, let's give communism another try. No, kids, we did try it. We did try it. Vladimir Lenin took over Moscow in 1917, and it was a long experiment, and it was horrible. So we don't need to try that again.
Well, I don't know. We got Lucifer in the world right now.
Trump?
I'm just saying Lucifer.
Oh, you mean literally?
I'm just saying Lucifer.
I know you're saying it, and I know you're wearing his coat.
See, everybody thinks that Lucifer was all wearing red.
Come on, this isn't...
He's always in red.
With a black shirt. Yes, this is exactly what Lucifer wears.
Really?
Yes.
Are you serious?
And you would be a great Lucifer. Sexy, irresistible to women.
You know.
Drake. Home along and out.
No. Bela Lugosi did that already.
Did what?
He did Lucifer in his own...
He was Dracula.
Well, but that was a Lucifer character. And it was brilliant. It was sexy. It has everything, all the elements that you're talking about.
You're saying Dracula is an avatar of Lucifer?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, certainly they could be in the same social circle.
Yeah.
You know, I could see that. You know, I could see Dracula coming over to a party and Lucifer opens the door.
Yeah, but he was sexy as all hell.
Right. Yes, always. Well, bad boys are sexy, as look who I'm talking to. I mean, absolutely. I always tried to be bad.
I don't think of myself. You know, I don't even think, you know, there are studs. I'm not a stud.
Oh.
I'm a romantic.
Okay. Well, that's exactly what a stud would say.
No.
Yes.
That's your idea of what a stud would say.
Well, you know, it's easy for you pretty boys.
You're a pretty boy.
Who the women want.
You're a very successful, pretty young man.
Well, successful,
you
I don't know.
Keep yourself in good shape?
That's different. That's not exactly a pretty boy. Yep. But yes, I'm successful. And
you're unmarried? I don't see any rings on your
never got married. 68 years, and I kept my toe out of the trap. I think that, come on, a little high five there, Billy D. Come on.
Well, I've done it 3 times.
How did it work out?
It's all very amusing to
there's
me.
There's a built-in problem, right?
I'm an 87-year-old man. I'm an old man.
Wow, 87. You look good. You don't even have wrinkles on your face.
Yeah, because I got good genes.
You and I should go to the old age home right now. We'd pull a couple of bitches like it was nothing. No, I bet you still, I mean, I've had people say to me who are in the, you know, 50 and up range, that women approach them and say things like, you're iconic, and then they get laid. People actually get iconic pussy in show business. I mean, that's pretty great.
Well, you're being very crude right now.
Oh, I'm being crude?
Yes.
Oh, suddenly we're in church with Billy D. Williams? Jesus fucking Christ.
I don't talk in those terms.
I get your personality now. It's interesting. It's like an actor's technique.
It is?
Yes.
You think it's an actor's technique?
Yes. Like, it's deliberately...
What about a sense of morality?
It's deliberately contrarian.
What about a sense of morality?
You're like, you know what? Your thing is like, you know what's not interesting? Agreeing. So, like, whatever when he says...
No, that's your thinking.
When he says X, I'll say Y. I can keep up. I like it. I'll play any game you want.
That's your perspective. That's your point of view.
I'm just so happy you're here. I'll play any game you want. You say X, I'll say Y.
I don't want to play
You know
again.
What? I can play in the other team. You say X after I say Y, and then I'll tell you why X is the right answer. How about that?
William. Monsieur William Marr.
Billy D, in my house.
I'm not about to play any games with anybody. I don't need to. I don't want to.
You sure don't.
And I'm not good at it.
You sure don't. You are playing with the house money, don't you think? I mean, don't you think it all came
out? I'm not playing with... I'm being a nice little guest on a show.
Club Random is brought to you by the audio marketing gurus at Radioactive Media. There's nothing more frustrating than finishing in second place, or worse, in last. Wouldn't you like your company to win? Take some control of your business and do something concrete and definitive to drive new sales and acquire new customers by partnering with shows like mine. Believe it or not, I have a lot of pull, so my audience listens to what I have to say. You can elevate your brand in an intimate space away from your competition while generating up to 9 times more leads by combining the power of audio and video channels with text messaging and generate an ROI as high as 5, 6, or 7 to 1. The best way to achieve these goals is through the team at Radioactive Media. Club Random has been partnering with Radioactive Media since the beginning, and they can create a customizable campaign for your company's needs. Radioactive Media has an exclusive deal to promote your product or service on Club Random with me and save up to 50%. Just lock in your first campaigns this year. Don't leave your marketing to luck. Go to radioactivemedia.com or text the word RANDOM to 511-511. Discover how audio marketing can surpass your current strategies with new and innovative ways that sound better. Go to radioactivemedia.com or text RANDOM to 511-511. Text RANDOM to 511-511 today to save up to 50%. Terms, conditions, message, and data rates may apply. Hey, I'll be at the Arizona Financial Theater in Phoenix, Arizona, May 4th. May 18th, I'll be at the Borgata, the casino I love in Atlantic City. And May 19th at the Palace Theater in Albany, New York. Now, like, what is your average? Give me your average day.
My average day is waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning.
What?
Not getting out of bed until maybe... between 10 and 12.
That's my man.
Going and having lunch with my buddies.
Lunch meaning breakfast?
No.
Your first meal.
Brunch. How about brunch?
Man, there you go. Your first meal of the day.
When I hang out with my buddies, one of my buddies is Rod Dyer, who used to own the Panavinos. There were a bunch of these guys.
Panavinos, the restaurant.
Yeah, the restaurant, yeah.
On... Where was it?
It was on Beverly and...
Is it gone?
Poinsettia. How do you say it?
Poinsettia, yeah. Is it gone?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's gone now. I mean, I think it's a different restaurant, but that whole generation is...
Did you live in L.A., Hollywood, 70s and 80s?
Yeah, I...
Okay.
I settled here in California in 1971.
We don't look at it as settling.
But I've been coming here since 1958.
How long? 58?
Since 1958, yeah.
How old were you in 1958, too?
I was about 20, maybe.
20, okay. That's right. You're 86.
I was in my very first movie with one of the great actors this country's ever produced.
Who's that?
Paul Muni.
Paul Muni?
Yeah.
He must have been 80 then. No, Paul Muni was a 30s actor.
Muni was in his 60s and died soon after. And we were very good friends. He was a wonderful man. But at that time, he was blacklisted, came back to the United
States. Right. He must have been older at the time, though. Because
he was 64 at
the time. Because in his heyday, I think he was so powerful that I believe he's the actor. I could be wrong, but one of the actors... Back then,
he played Daniel Zola. He played Pasteur.
Okay,
He was the original Scarface,
and he was not Robin Hood, right? That was
no.
Okay, all right. But I think what Paul Muni did was
learn your history.
get the one slightest thing wrong.
You're in show business.
Right. Jesus Christ. I'm going to flagellate myself tonight for missing up the 30s actor. I know who played Robin Hood. It was,
Errol Flynn.
Errol Flynn. Correct. Okay. But Paul Muni, I think, was the one who insisted that I think it was in his contract, his character had to be the title of the movie. Like Captain Blood. Oh, no, that was Errol Flynn.
No.
Maybe this was Errol Flynn.
No.
Somebody had that in their contract.
I had no idea who that is.
Okay. But you're a student of that period of movie history?
Yeah, I grew up in those years, with Cagney and G. Robinson.
How much was a movie in that era?
Oh, my God. Saturday?
Yeah.
On a Saturday?
25 cents or
something like that. 10, wow. 10, 25 cents, yeah.
Wow. Unbelievable.
It was, I was thinking about it the other day. I thought, my God, I can remember when there was the old adage, ignorance is bliss.
Yes.
I mean, the less you knew, everybody was happy about that. Now everybody knows everything. It's like complete, it creates such unhappiness.
Yes. And what do you attribute that to? Like the phone? I would say.
Technology. Yeah, technology. Technology has changed everything in our lives.
And it's amazing the way, again, we're seeing it with AI. We never really get ahead of the technology. We should. We saw it with the phone, the internet. It's like, no, we just let it loose, really, before we work the bugs out. Whatever it's going to do, it's going to do. And then we deal with it. And maybe we ran out of bullets in the Russian roulette gun with AI. Because this is one where we let out way before they should have worked out the bugs, because they have not worked out the bugs. I mean, that thing, when they do war game testing, they go to the nuclear option way too soon, which people have not done for 75 years. We could have blown each other up, and we did not. 80 years. Well, 75 when we both had it. So.
Well, it's a mystery, I tell you. It's a mystery.
Oh, you'd be a good Hercule Poirot. You've been a detective before, right?
Oh, I've done I've done the whole detective thing. Yeah,
of course.
Well, you know something? What's so funny? I am probably one of the nicest, gentlest people you'll ever want to meet in your whole life.
I'm loving it.
And. When I think of myself playing these tough guys, I know how to play a tough guy.
Right.
As a matter of fact, when I was a kid growing up, my mother once said to me, the best tough guys in movies are the guys who were the nicest guys. G. Robinson.
Edward G. Robinson, yeah. Sure.
Once said to me, when I met him, I did a play with Laurence Olivier's wife, Joni Plowright, on Broadway. And we were out here doing the play before we went to Broadway with it. And I'll never forget, he knew, well, Angela Lansbury was also in the play. And he came backstage. And as I was leaving my dressing room, he says, kid, you're a good actor, kid.
You are a good actor.
I'll never forget that.
Everything you do, you can't take your eyes off you.
Well, you're very kind.
But it's true.
Thank you.
There's no other way careers last as long as yours do and people retain the affection. Anyway, all right, so you have lunch with your buddy.
Yes.
We're back to your day.
Well, today was Rod, Don Lewis. They'll love this when they hear I'm talking and saying their names. Gary Chapman, who's a wonderful sculptor.
And these are
and
people
doing a piece for me, as a matter of fact.
Oh, really? These are people you just met along the way?
No, these are guys I've known for many, many years.
Known for many years, met along the way. And
yeah, along the way we met each other. Yes. You know, and we're all expiring though. I mean,
you know who used to have this going on in his life? Larry King.
Really?
Larry King had the same breakfast every day with the same group of guys. You know, it's just a thing that you can do. And
Larry King, I'll never forget Larry King. He interviewed me once.
Of course. You interview everybody.
And he wanted me to talk about the racial question.
Oh, well, I could have told him to get off of that.
And I refused to get it in my own little quiet way. I didn't want to get into it.
That's my guy.
And I don't think he likes me since then.
Oh,
he never invited me on his television show.
This was before he had a television
show?
This
was a radio show.
Jesus Christ, you go back far.
Yes.
I mean, you were Larry King's radio show.
Yeah.
And Paul Muni, and wow.
Listen, Olivia, I spent time with
Olivier.
I used to spend time talking to Olivia.
What was he like? Because I was the biggest Laurence Olivier fan, possibly because when I was a kid, my father thought, Laurence Olivier, because he was kind of like known as like the De Niro of his era, right?
One of the greatest
actor. Now, there are people who have diverging opinions. There are people who say he was a ham, and he certainly was not a method actor.
There's nothing wrong with being a ham.
Nothing wrong with it at all. And he was from that school of acting. There's that famous story when he did Marathon Man with Dustin Hoffman, and Dustin Hoffman stayed up for 3 days so that in the scene where he's being operated on by the dentist, he can look frazzled and out of his mind. And Laurence Olivier apparently said to him, "Dear boy, why don't you just try acting?"
Maybe he was right.
Well,
I mean,
both are valid.
They both come from two schools of acting.
Whatever works.
Yeah.
Whatever works
But Olivier, the thing I always loved about Olivier, I remember we used to have a lot of discussions, and whenever I was just a 23-year-old kid,
he must have tried to fuck you.
And I remember the first time I met him, I gave him a kiss on the cheek.
Well,
and I thought, oh my God, this guy thinks I'm gay.
No, I think he was half.
I know all about all of that. Listen, I grew up with all of that. That doesn't matter to me. All
what
that
mean
stuff.
You grew up with all that.
All like of the guys gay trying to and, fuck? You know, what's gay and what's not gay. You know, all of this, you know, discussion that we find ourselves mired in these days.
I know, but
this is a joke to me. Billy, but anyway,
this is what I mean about you. Like, you're so attractive that, see, I never.
Guys have hit on me all my life.
And they haven't on me. I'm just saying this is a difference. Like, sometimes a guy is so attractive to women, even the guys want to fuck him. I'm just saying you're blessed.
Okay.
Just say thank you.
Which is fine.
Thank you, Jesus.
No, it's fine. But anyway, with Olivier.
I'm sure it was more than fine.
Olivier was the thing I liked about Olivier was that.
His balls tasted.
Whenever I had. What? you're ridiculous. I like his shoes, by the way.
Thanks. I like yours. Those are like spats.
Yeah. Spats. My father used to wear spats.
Really?
Yeah. But Olivier was, the thing I loved about Olivier was he was like a kid. He was
really?
Like a little kid.
Is that right?
You know, he was like this, he was doing the play with, I think, Anthony Quinn, Beckett, I think, at the time.
Beckett.
And he was right next. He was right next door to us. In New York.
Beckett's a great play.
But the beauty of Olivier was that he was never trying to impress me with this Olivier person. He was always, every time I had a question I wanted to ask, he wouldn't allow me, he wouldn't let me ask the question. He was always busy probing me.
I'll bet he was very busy probing you.
Well, okay, but I mean, he wanted to know. I hadn't thought about it that way, but anyway.
I believe I brought that up at the beginning.
I have a very innocent way of looking at these things.
Well, you were young.
Yes, I was young.
Look, there were two times in my
home. But anyway, let me just tell this story.
All right, please do.
Okay. I said to him, I remember saying, do you ever thought about playing Othello? And he said, no. He said, yeah, I thought about playing Othello, but I always see, do you remember who Paul Robeson?
I was just going to say, before you finish the story about Othello, for the people who don't know what Othello is, and I know you hate to talk about race, but Othello is a Shakespearean play. He's a Moor. He's black. He's from North Africa. And his friend, right. Iago.
It was a Shakespearean play.
Okay, but
don't forget to say that.
I said that at the beginning. Oh, it's a Shakespearean play.
Right.
So it's so race is relevant here. Sometimes race has to be brought up.
But this was a cute moment, I think.
So Olivier would have had to have done it in blackface.
He did it. He finally did it.
He did it in blackface?
He said he didn't want it. He wanted to do it, but he always had this vision of, or picture of Robeson. And Robeson's stature and Robeson's voice.
Paul Robeson was black.
And his voice.
For people who don't know, Paul Robeson.
Yeah, he was a black man.
Who sang Old Man River.
Yes. And who was a communist.
And he was a communist.
A communist socialist?
Well, a socialist is a communist.
Yeah.
I mean, of extreme, yeah. I would say. Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
he had this, his vision was this Robeson.
Right.
So finally when he did it, he filmed it. I don't know if you've ever seen it. His performance of it. If you ever get a chance to see it,
I'm going to try.
It's really interesting.
I bet you they don't allow you anymore.
But he did something that, because he was known to be a bit outrageous. There were two schools of acting at that time. The Edmund Kean School of Acting, which was like Gielgud, neck up. And then there was a...
Neck up?
Yeah, you know, it was the words,
right.
Rather than being physical.
Right, okay.
Olivier was more physical.
Okay.
In fact, he got criticized a lot for being physical and doing things with his voice. That was a bit outrageous.
Wow.
But when he did Othello, I fell out laughing. He stuck his ass out and walked around with his ass.
Problematic.
You know, it was like, you know, because black people are supposed to have big asses, right?
I understand.
I fell out laughing.
Bradley Cooper thinks he's got a problem with the nose.
I thought it was hysterical. I loved it. But see, I love that kind of stuff.
Yes. Big asses? Who doesn't?
No.
No, I know.
Yeah.
I agree.
Okay.
But here's the thing. Today, I mean, they would never let you do that.
Why?
Blackface?
Why not?
Because
you should do it.
That's your point of view.
If you're an actor, you should do anything you want to do.
That's a great point of view, but the theater would be bombed.
I mean, Muni and I used to talk about this all the time. Muni was the one who was the first person that I worked with in those years who said to me, as an actor, you should be able to do whatever you think you can do, you should be able to do it.
But again, not to bring up your sore point, but you actually lived in a period where you couldn't do that. Where you couldn't play the part
matter.
You should have played.
But it didn't matter. The point is...
And that's a great attitude, but it still did happen.
Of course it happened.
Okay.
But the fact is that you discuss it. Anybody can talk about it means that it wasn't happening.
But I mean, but and the Paul point Muni is, comes from an era.
You don't go through life feeling like I'm a victim.
Correct. I couldn't agree with that more. I'm just.
I mean, I refuse to go through life saying to the world, I'm pissed off. I'm not going to be pissed off 24 hours a day.
And you shouldn't, because of all that pussy you got. That's what I've been trying to tell you.
Oh, boy.
But
you're a very sick person.
Not a sick person.
You're a very funny person.
Thank you. I'm glad you think so. Look, Paul Muni.
Did you like George Carlin, by the way?
Who worked on the Panama Canal. I'm sorry, who?
Did you like George Carlin?
The best. Oh, are you kidding?
He was
a hero of mine.
He was an artist.
Oh, total artist. Like, nonpareil. Like, there's no match. When he died, he was playing the Orleans Hotel in...
Who was the English actor, Olsen? What's his name?
Olsen.
The one that played Churchill? Great actor.
Oh, I think you mean...
Somebody... Who?
No. There's no one else here.
Oh, okay.
Don't worry, we're alone.
Somebody was telling me today.
I'll think of it. I know.
Great actor.
He is a great actor,
but
we're drunk and stoned, so we can't think of his name.
You know?
But it's no reflection on him acting. And the acting is, but
Gary Olson?
Yes, Gary Oldman, who played Dracula in Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula.
Brilliant. Because he Meryl Streep, they disappear into these characters.
Well, again, that's back to our discussion about the different brands of acting. I mean, you can be...
No, I can see... You know, somebody was telling me today that he's trying to do George Carlin's life.
Who is?
Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman as George Carlin?
I would love to see if he could pull that one off.
I would pay at the Nickelodeon to see that one.
I would love to see if he could pull that one off.
That's an interesting subject, because George Carlin, besides being such a great comedian... had a very up and down life. I mean, you know, what?
What is the best kind of character you can play?
I'm saying it would be an interesting movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the problem with it is almost impossible to portray stand-up comedy. You can either do it or don't do it, but whenever they try to portray it, it's just cringy. It is.
What did you think of...
cringy.
Playing Lenny Bruce.
Cringy.
You didn't like it?
I'm a stand-up comic. I mean, to us, it's nails on a chalkboard.
Well, you're an artist.
Thank you. I think so. And Lenny Bruce was an artist. But when you try to take that into this other dimension of recreating something...
I knew Lenny
...that has
Bruce.
To be just real, they, you know, Tom Hanks, who's such a brilliant guy... That I remember when he, in the 80s, when he came to the improv because he was doing a movie about a stand-up, playing a stand-up, and he wasn't a stand-up. And he kind of learned
He's
how to...
He's good at it, though.
Exactly. He kind of learned how to be one in just a few months. But, you know, it's not the kind of art where
It's a sensibility, isn't it?
It's a total sensibility. It's an instinct for... I think finding the thing that no one else is really noticing or saying that everyone is thinking, or if you mention it, would agree with in their mind, you know, it's at its best, I think it's about honesty. That to me has always been, and that was Carlin too. Carlin was not like Republican or Democrat. He just called out bullshit wherever.
Well, the whole thing about God, I thought was...
And God, yes, he was certainly inspirational for me.
That was interesting.
coming out as an atheist, yes. That made it okay.
No, I mean, he was looking at the hypocrisy.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's all hypocrisy.
Yeah.
I mean, they just shamelessly make it up as they go along. But
it's amazing how much hypocrisy
we
have in this wonderful, beautiful country called America.
Well, the world, not just the country.
The world, yes.
Yeah. But was your family... religious? Were you brought up in that?
Yeah.
They were? Yeah. What, church?
Well, I was baptized, I think, Presbyterian, I think. my grandmother was the English church.
Anglican.
She was an Anglican. My father was a Baptist. My mother and my sister, eventually became a Jehovah Witness, which is was always very interesting. No, you know, I learned one thing about the Jehovah Witness people. They're really sweet, lovely, wonderful people. They just could be a pain in the neck.
Michael Jackson was one for a while.
Yeah, and so was Prince, wasn't he?
I'm not sure what Prince was. He certainly was super religious. I remember when he was such a big fan of mine, and that definitely went away, I think, because what I would say about religion. But
Well, your comedy is sort of, there's a lot of intellect in your comedy.
That will drive people away, too. But I don't think that drove Prince away. I think he was a very smart guy.
And arrogance. You have arrogance.
Thank you. Would you like to borrow some? I think you're set. I mean, arrogance is not the correct word. I mean, like, cockiness can bleed into arrogance. It depends on where people have different ideas of where the needle should be. I like to think that I can, like, stop it before it gets fully into arrogant, but you have to be a little cocky to be in this business. I mean, do you think a normal man could wear a red jacket? I don't. I mean, you have to be a little confident in yourself, and
I'm a normal man.
Right. You never been in a fight in your life?
One fight in my whole entire life as a little boy, and that boy became one of my dearest friends.
Yeah, I never had much violence in my life either. I was very lucky.
I do not like violence.
No, who does? Well, some people do.
No, there are people who love it.
Oh, yeah.
I grew up with boys who love
it. Right, they love getting into a fight.
I was never one of those people.
No, I wasn't either. I always wanted to be a lover, not a fighter. Like I said, you know, three times a lady. That's what I call women.
As my grandmother would say, you're incorrigible.
So you're married now, speaking of women?
Yeah, I'm still married. Married for...
So this is your third wife?
My third wife.
Third's the charm. How long have you been married?
51 years, I think.
51?
Yeah.
Oh. So those were very early marriages you had.
Yeah,
And then 50, but...
Well, they were all wonderful people. All of them are wonderful people.
But aren't you, like, sort of honest and forthright about the fact that marriages can be open?
Well, I live that way, so I guess that sort of says it all.
Right. And
I don't know, open. I can be very jealous. Are you kidding? Oh, if I'm not in control, it's a no-no.
But, I mean, it must have been...
I'm a typical.
You're not typical. That is definitely not something you are. You could say normal, yes. You're not typical. It's not typical when, I mean, if you're married 51 years, we're going back to 1973. Okay, so.
Listen, when women are,
You made Mahogany in 1980?
Yeah, 1980, I think.
And you made Lady Sings the Blues the year before?
That was I don't remember.
Something like that, 78, 79. Okay. So in that era, I mean, you must have been, like, constantly approached by three times the ladies.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I mean, women love me.
Right. So, I mean, your wife either has to, like, make peace with that or somehow...
She was too busy playing poker.
Poker?
Yes.
Your wife's a big poker player?
She's a big poker player, yes.
That's her passion?
Yeah.
Really? She's married to Billy Dee Williams and she's thinking about an inside straight?
Yeah.
Really? That's your life?
Yes.
That is fascinating. To this day, she plays poker?
No, they all stopped doing that years ago. Oh. Hank Fonda used to come to my house and play poker with us, with them.
Hank Fonda? Yeah. My God, you're a treasure trove of like the first generation of Hollywood stars.
Oh, Hank Fonda was a wonderful man.
I'll bet.
Great, great actor.
Great actor.
One of my favorite actors of all time. Even Brando talked about it. And I also, spent a little time with Brando. Brando loved Hank Fonda. Hank Fonda, nuance, subtlety.
Right.
That was key to
Grapes of Wrath.
His greatness, yeah, Grapes of Wrath.
Maybe we're all part of a big soul. Remember that speech?
I don't remember it, but it was Steinbeck, right?
Yes, from the Steinbeck book, right?
Yeah.
But that's the big speech.
He did a movie many years ago. I wish I could remember the name of the
12
movie.
12 Angry Men?
No, that was a great movie.
Unbelievable.
But no, he did, this is early in his career. He played a fugitive. Yeah. And it was, when you think of fugitives, when I think of fugitives today who get, like the other day, some kid got, I don't know what happened to that kid. I hope, did they kill him or did they destroy him?
Oh.
Some kid in the back east in Pennsylvania, I think.
Did what?
He killed his mother-in-law and killed all of these people.
Well, and, I'm sure many.
He ended up hijacking some people and
right.
some house.
Right.
And I don't know. I haven't heard any more news about it, but I'm curious to know. But anyway, I don't know what the fuck. Sitting here talking about nothing and nonsense.
I love it. That is the point of Club Random. We do not have an agenda here. We just want to, like, I mean, we. I'm using the royal we.
Listen, I'm having a great time.
I am too. And just the idea that, you know, whatever I did right in life, this to me is like one of the ultimate payoffs. That for whatever road led me here where I have enough cachet to have you want to come here and talk to me. It's like the
are you serious?
I'm telling you, this is what? Because when else would this happen in my life? But because then we have this podcast and I can get
you. Do you feel like you had to say that?
No, I don't feel I have to say it. Do I strike you as someone who feels he has to say anything?
I'm sorry I said that, though.
No, okay. No. I mean, you just won't accept my premise that you were so important in the formative period of my life. And, you know, I have to understand, like, a lot of what our show business connections are, yes, we do adore talent, but it's emotional. Like, what connects with you emotionally? That's why music is so important to people's lives. That's why have you ever had even one hit? You can work for the rest of your life because the people who got laid to that hit, oh, I know, I'm sorry, I'm being crude again, but the people who got laid to that hit, when they hit 40 and they have money, they're going to want to see it again. They want to going to go see that band again.
It's very, very clear. Our love is here to stay.
Why, is that where you lost your virginity to?
Not for a year, but ever and the day. The radio and the telephone and the movies that we know may just be passing fancies and in time may go.
Wow.
But oh, my dear, our love is here to stay.
Nicely.
Together we're going a long, long way. In time, the Rockies may crumble, Gibraltar may tumble. They're only made of clay, but our love is here to stay.
Nicely done. Boy, you know all the lyrics.
I'm a romantic.
Yeah, I see. What year was that song, would you imagine? You remember?
I don't know. That's probably way back in the 50s.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think before that. Is that Cole Porter, maybe?
Probably.
Somebody like that. I mean, certainly.
Well, I did an album back in 1961.
61?
Yeah, I did an album.
You were a crooner?
I did an album called Let's Misbehave with Billy D. Williams.
Let's Misbehave. See?
I was singing, I was being trained to be what they call a chic East Side nightclub singer.
But Let's Misbehave is a very telling title. I mean, it's
practice. And I was 23 years old.
I'm sure you were. And I'm sure a lot of horny housewives were like, yes. This would be misbehaving, wouldn't it? If I had sexual...
Read my book.
I am going to. I cannot. Why? Because that's in there?
It's all of that.
Really? Well, tell me now. Give me a preview.
All that madness, all that craziness.
I want to hear about these three times the ladies throwing themselves at you. I want to hear what it's like.
I've had so many women throw them. I've had... The first time I remember after I did Lady Sings the Blues, I was... somewhere, in Detroit, I think. It was the opening of Lady Sings the Blues. And a woman approached me and literally fainted. And it was like one of the most amazing experiences I ever had in my life, to know that somebody can just look at you and literally fall to the ground.
Exactly.
This
is what I'm talking about.
I mean, and I've had that happen to me many, many times. I've had people cry, weep when they met me. I've had people try presenting their, wanting me to touch their babies. I mean, if I wanted to be a preacher, I could have made a fortune.
I'm sure, absolutely.
I mean, if I
I get it.
You know,
it's so powerful.
Yeah,
that connection that is, it's on a level that's beyond.
And a lot of people don't know this, but it's true. I mean, people know it, but they don't know it.
Not to try to compete, but a couple of weeks ago, I was on the road. I did a show. After the show, I'm in my hotel room. An hour later, a woman is banging and banging on the door. Finally, I let her out.
You're crazy.
Yeah.
You are so crazy. You are so insane. Bless you. You're wonderful. You're a fantastic, brilliant human being.
Oh, thank you. I love to laugh. And I love to make people I like laugh, you know? I mean, life is so short and sometimes brutish and nasty.
Well, you have, my grandmother would look at you and say, he's wicked.
Wicked, you're right. Yeah.
It's in your eyes, it's in your smile.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I want to be a little wicked, you know?
Well, you are.
There's just too much conformity, I think, in our country. I mean,
well, don't worry about all of that. No. It doesn't matter.
Well, I have to worry a little bit about it because I have to both be who I am and try to...
And you got
to
talk about it. You got to show. You got to do all of this.
Yeah, and try to keep my job.
Okay.
You know, I mean, this is a very treacherous landscape we live in now where people like to try to cancel people. I'm sure you realize this.
Oh, yeah. You see it all the time.
I mean, I don't think they could cancel you, but I know there are things in your book.
It's too late.
Right. It's too late and you're too iconic. But there are things in your book about, you know, your sex life that the current crop of virtue signalers would find problematic, as they call it.
Because, really?
Yes. I think I'm not sure where they are with group sex, but some people think it's exploitative or...
Well, I mean, every kid experiments.
With group sex?
Yeah, with sex. Oh, when you're a kid, I was living one of the biggest madams in New York City at the time.
Living with one of the biggest madams?
Madams, yes.
Why were you living with her?
We knew each other when we were kids growing up, and she...
became a madam?
And she became a madam, and that's when I found out about discovered what that whole world was all about. It was a very interesting world.
And I bet you all her three times a ladies said to you, I'll give you this one for free.
No. It wasn't even like that. It was she had a little, that was when I first discovered the little black book with the names of all the people.
Who were paying to use her services.
For her services, yeah.
Like who, Mayor John Lindsay?
Well, no, there was...
A Beam.
A famous...
Not Ed Koch.
No politicians.
No politicians? Come on.
No politicians, no. What was his name? He was a famous designer, clothing designer.
Calvin Klein.
No, not Klein, no. Italian.
Yves Saint Laurent. Dolce and Gabbana.
Come on, I can't think of his name. But anyway, I remember when I remember she came home at 5 o'clock in the morning wearing a black diamond mink coat down to the floor. That was her gift, plus whatever else that was given to her. And I thought, my goodness gracious, this is really the way to live.
And you never look back.
Right? But
I mean, it just...
She ended up going to Italy. She married a count, an Italian count, whatever that means. And she wanted me to go to Italy at that time, but I didn't. I was on Broadway doing The Taste of Honey, so I didn't want to, you know...
Remember Living in Shame, the record?
Living in Shame?
Diana Ross and the Supremes. They had two hits in six...
No, I don't remember that, no.
Well, you must remember Love Child.
Love Child, yes.
Okay. I'm Living in Shame was the follow-up hit to Love Child.
Oh, so...
Love Child really broke the mold there because up until then, Berry Gordy never wanted the records to be political at all. And for good reason.
Because, well, I mean, it's true with Marvin Gaye when he did What's Going On. Because I was on the contract to Berry at that time.
Under contract?
I was on the contract. I had a 7-year contract with Berry Gordy.
Because he had a film company?
Yeah, because he had a film company.
Oh. Oh, right, because he produced those movies, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So well, I remember when he was really upset about...
Did you see that? That was in... That's the Supremes.
Oh, that's great.
That was in one wonderful. Of my... I've had that frame. I had that from when I was a kid. It was in an album.
Well, I got to send you one of my pieces so you can hang up for
it. I would love it.
Yeah.
I mean, it is Club Random. But Diana Ross and the Supremes did Love Child, which was a great departure because before then, it was just songs that everyone could relate to because Berry Gordy was already, you know, fighting, obviously... Again, we don't talk about that subject, but you know what. So, like, the songs had to be something that appealed to everyone. So they were just about love, because everyone can relate to love, no matter what race they are. So Love Child was that's where we get the term Love Child now, a baby born out of wedlock. And it was about something. It was I would compare it to Porgy and Bess. Porgy and Bess went on Broadway... Oh, no, I'm sorry. Showboat went on Broadway in 1927. And until then, all the musicals had been on just June Moon, Love Dove, you know, very simplistic kind of stuff, or Gilbert and Sullivan. And Showboat was about something. It was about the you-know-what topic.
Old Man River,
he just keep rolling. Robeson. Right.
Enough.
And also that was, don't know why there's no sun up in the sky.
And do you know that...
Stormy weather.
Ava Gardner played the character.
Richard Belzer used to sing, don't know why there's lipstick on my fly. Sloppy blowjob. Oh, the dear departed Richard Belzer. That makes me sad. Anyway... I would say Love Child was that same kind of thing. It was a departure. Suddenly there was a song about, you know, a baby out of wedlock. And then the follow, they were like, oh, okay. And there was a giant hit. You must remember that. Love Child was a giant hit.
Yeah.
I was 12. So just interested in music. The follow-up hit was, I'm living in shame, mama. And, you know, it was about she married some rich guy. Mm-hmm. And Mama was still like, you know, I don't know, but she was living in shame. I don't remember all the lyrics, but I know it was not a good situation. Anyway, you worked with Diana Ross. I mean, she was your co-star in those movies.
No, we did
you
too.
You know, I opened for her. We have something in common.
Oh.
My first big gig was opening for Diana Ross in 1982 at Caesar's Palace.
Well, we did two movies together.
Yeah, I know you have it better with Diana Ross. I'm not competing on that level. I was just the chimp who went out while the people were getting their seats, and then the big star came on.
You were the opening act?
I was the opening act. She saw me on The Tonight Show, did my first Tonight Show, and she was like, oh, I can get him for $2,000 a week, and she did. But she held me over. For the second week at $2,500, I will have you know. She was very nice to me. I always liked her.
Oh, we had a good time. We had a very nice relationship.
You could see the chemistry on screen.
Oh, it was great chemistry.
Yes.
Yeah. It's too bad we're not doing a movie even at this particular juncture.
You could.
You know, but...
You know what? Don't crack. We can't say it.
You're terrible.
And by terrible, you mean wonderful. Wonderful. I know you do.
You're wonderful.
I love that you're wonderful. All right, should we go have a Colt 45 at the pool table?
Well, I can't, you know, I can't do much standing and walking because I'm...
Well, you're going to have to leave.
Back. Yeah.
I mean, you're going to have to do that much.
I have to go in that direction, is that it?
Exactly. Okay. The only way I can get you out of here.
Oh.
But
anyway, I just
for
wanna,
you, I
thank
mean,
you so much.
Thank you. This was like, I'm just going to say it one more time. You can scoff, but it was the thrill of life because, you know, you just have meant a lot to me. And I just thought you were like the coolest dude at the time when I needed cool, when I needed cool dude, you know, icons to look up to as a young growing male. Thank you.
It works every time.
There it is.
A lady gave this to me.
I'll bet a lady gave you everything.